glorious hours, from the sound of Mount Royal's chimes, up to the Maritimes, something to sing about this land of ours.
I have wandered my way to the wild wood of Hudson Bay, treated my toes to Quebec's morning dew, where the sweet summer breeze kissed the leaves of the maple trees, sharing this song that I'm singing to you.
From the Vancouver Island to the Alberta Highland, across the prairies, the lakes, to Ontario's towers, from the sound of Mount Royal's chimes, up to the Maritimes, something to sing about this land of ours.
Yes, there's something to sing about, tune up the string about, call out in chorus or quietly hum, of a land that's still young, with a ballad that's still unsung, telling the promise of great things to come.
From the Vancouver Island to the Alberta Highland, across the prairies, the lakes, to Ontario's towers, from the sound of Mount Royal's chimes, up to the Maritimes, something to sing about this land of ours. This land of ours.
Radio show.
Is brewed fresh and served fresh at the peak of its flavor. If you're a tough customer, only the taste of this
radio show
will do. So go ahead, let Dunkin' Donuts make your
radio experience
exquisite.
Indeed.
Dunkin' Donuts, serving sweet treats from the Pop Underground. Thursdays, noon to 1.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
This week on the Arts Report, film, theater, dance, books, visual art, and more. Every Wednesday at 5 p.m., the Arts Reporters explore what's fun, fascinating, campy, or critical in the Vancouver art scene. You can find bonus content on our Mixcloud, Facebook, and Twitter. Got an idea for a review, interview, or original production? Email arts@citr.ca. Listen Wednesdays at 5 p.m. or anytime on citr.ca.
Discorder Magazine has been supporting local music for over 30 years. Thanks to the long-term support of the Rickshaw Theater, Discorder lives. Favorite bands are playing at the Rickshaw Theater. Check out their calendar just behind the cover of Discorder Magazine or at rickshawtheater.com.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosions.
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band swag, all types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder Magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the top floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
CITR presents The Internet, a modern soul collective straight out of LA.
featuring Sid the Kid and Matt Martians. Catch them Saturday, October 31st at the Alexander Gastown. Tickets available at Red Cat, Zulu, Beat Street, Dipped, and TimberConcerts.com.
Explore music that spans Eric Satie's Musique d'Ambulement to Lawrence English's dense electronic drones and nomadic streams, Vancouver New Music's 2015 Festival of Ambient Music. Pneumatic Streams runs from October 22nd to 24th. For more information, visit newmusic.org.
The Canadian federal election is coming up on October 19th. It's important that you get registered in order to vote. To register, or check if you're already registered, you can visit the Elections Canada website at www.elections.ca. We also have lots of information for voters, including necessary ID, writing information, and the location of Elections Canada offices. If you're registered, you should receive a voter information card by mail telling you when and where to vote. You can also use the online voter information service. You can vote on election day at your designated polling station, on advanced polling days between October 9th and October 12th, at any Elections Canada office, or by mail. Elections Canada offices are now open 7 days a week. To vote by mail, you need to apply by October 13th, online, by mail, or at any Elections Canada office. Remember, get informed, register, and vote by October 19th.
Right here on News 101.
Right here on News 101.
What motivated you to become a candidate in the provincial election?
The media portrayal of last week's protest that resulted in polarizing images of black-clad activists taken to the streets.
He was just explaining to us the reason why they wanted to show this film on campus.
The official stance is that we are for the Olympics.
News 101 reporter Brad Pepping was there.
By discriminating against homeless people in Vancouver, there's a disproportionate impact on Aboriginal people as well as people with disabilities.
I was pretty outraged. I mean, it is outrageous.
In-depth coverage from an alternative perspective.
You're listening to News 101, Vancouver's only live, volunteer-produced, student and community newscast, offering you local, national, and international news from an alternative perspective.
What's left of us.
Today is Friday, October 16th. I'm Eva.
And I'm Sam. You're listening to News 101 on CITR 101.9 FM. Broadcasting to you live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia to our UBC campus, to the residents of Vancouver, and to the listeners of our newscast and podcast on our website, citr.ca.
Good evening. It's 5:14 and time for a full hour of independent campus, local, and international news.
Up first, we have News 101 Director Rohit Joseph's interview with Mario Canseco, journalist and VP of Public Affairs at Insights West, about polling and its influence on strategic voting.
We also have our election debate panel with Vancouver Quadra independent candidate Jean-François Caron, independent Radical Marijuana Party candidate Mark Boyer, UBC Greens President Regan Zhang, and President of the Young Liberals of Canada, Justin Kaiser.
But first, some headlines for today. In campus news, UBC announces international tuition will increase 46.8% over the next 3 years. UBC has announced that international tuition fees will be increased by almost 50% starting May 2016. The change is a result of the Board of Governors' mission to set these fees, quote, at the levels that reflect UBC's standing as a global university and the value of a UBC degree. The new fees will also bring UBC's international student tuition in line with peer institutions like the University of Toronto and McGill University. These increases will be applied at both the undergraduate and non-thesis graduate levels. The proposed increases are program-specific and will range from 0 to 23.5% in the first year, by the same amount the following year, and by 0 to 15% in the third year. The impact of these increases will be reviewed at the end of each academic year. According to the consultation website, the proposed amounts were determined through benchmarking against peer institutions and data about the primary factors international students consider when selecting a university. Current students will not be affected by the changes. Consultation on the tuition increases will be open until November 12th. Students can provide feedback through a confidential web form or by contacting their elected student representatives. There will be three town halls where students can learn more about the proposal and have questions answered by senior administrators. UBC failed to protect Dr. Birdall's academic freedom, says Honorable Lynn Smith. The results of a fact-finding inquiry conducted by former BC Supreme Court Justice Lynn Smith were released by the university on Thursday. The inquiry looked at the treatment of the Sauder School of Business Professor Jennifer Birdall, Dr. Jennifer Birdall, after she published a blog post on August 8th. It found that the university did not do enough to protect Dr. Birdall's academic freedom. Birdall's blog, concerning the departure of former UBC president Arvind Gupta, addressed her thoughts on the culture of masculinity surrounding academia at UBC. Smith concluded, quote, when Birdall published a blog post on August 8, 2015, commenting on the resignation of Dr. Arvind Gupta as president of UBC, she was doing so as a member of the UBC faculty, drawing on her research. She also found that John Montalbano, chair of the UBC Board of Governors, as well as some members of the Sauder School of Business, could have acted in a manner more consistent with UBC's obligation to protect academic freedom. Smith went on to say that while, quote, no individual intended to interfere with Dr. Birdall's academic freedom, several small mistakes led to a failure of the larger system. In a later press release, the university stated its acceptance of Smith's inquiry and announced they will hire a specialist, create an education program, and develop a formal module to ensure academic freedom is safeguarded.
In local news, Lead Now recommends NDP's Mira Orek in Vancouver Granville, despite Liberals' lead in polling. Lead Now officially endorsed the NDP's Mira Orek on Thursday over Liberal Jody Wilson-Raybould for Vancouver Granville, even though the Liberals are leading in the polls. As a result, they have been accused of pro-NDP bias and conflict of interest. Lead Now Executive Director Lindsay Popes has confirmed that she and Mira Orek are friends. Orek also volunteers with the organization Front Runner, founded by Popes. Vancouver Granville resident Bernadine Bolton, who plans to vote strategically, has written to Elections Canada about her concern that Lead Now may be biased and confusing voters. Bolton said, quote, I just want things to be fair. This is a very important election for us. I want people to be informed, and there's a lot of confusion out there. However, Canada's former chief electoral officer, Jean-Pierre Kingsley, says that there's no apparent violation. Popes has denied the bias and says after Lead Now's polling that the Liberals and NDP are tied. They surveyed assignees to decide which candidate to endorse. Around 2,000 people responded to the survey, with 61% favoring Orek and 39% Wilson-Raybould. Popes also noted that across Canada, Lead Now has endorsed 13 Liberals and 10 NDP candidates. Orek has also denied preferential treatment and said, quote, my assumption and understanding is that their pledge signers vote, and this is the outcome. A spokesman for Wilson-Raybould said, quote, I am confident that the people of Vancouver Granville will make their own choice for real change, and that it will be Liberal. Lead Now's VoteTogether.ca campaign encourages people to strategically vote in swing ridings to defeat the Conservatives in the upcoming election.
In national news, the leaders of two major parties may have a larger electoral fight on their hands than expected. Three out of five of the party leaders are running for election in Montreal ridings. According to 308.com, a poll aggregating website, Justin Trudeau has a large lead with 52.9% of the vote compared to the NDP's candidate at 18%. However, NDP leader Tom Mulcair and Bloc Québécois leader Gilles Duceppe are in much closer races. After serving his riding for 21 years, Duceppe was ousted in the NDP takeover of Quebec in 2011. Now trying to win back his seat, Duceppe is in a statistical tie with the NDP candidate, each with roughly 34% of the vote. After easily winning his seat in 2008 and 2011, never winning less than 55% of the vote, Mulcair's popularity has dropped to 41%, leaving the Liberal candidate, Rachel Ben-Dayan, within 3 points of Mulcair. According to pollster David Coletto, typically, having a federal leader run in a given riding can boost a party's chances by up to 8 points. Although polls cannot guarantee a win or loss, they tell us that the two party leaders may face closer races than they expect. Wilfrid Laurier University goes into lockdown early Friday morning. Wilfrid Laurier University in Waterloo, Ontario, locked down its campus around 6 a.m. on Friday for 5 hours, closing buildings and canceling classes. The FBI alerted the university overnight to a threatening post made on 4chan. The post threatened Laurier's science building. It stated, quote, "Some of you are all right. Don't go to Laurier Science Building tomorrow," and was accompanied by an image. Authorities were uneasy because of similarities with a post made prior to the Oregon shooting on October 1st. Waterloo Regional Police Service Superintendent Pat Dietrich said the lockdown was put in place to err on the side of caution. Several schools have been the subject of similar posts this month, including Monash University in Melbourne, Australia, on Thursday. Dietrich said the police are still trying to determine the poster's location. The lockdown at Laurier was lifted at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Few students were present on campus after the lockdown was lifted, as it is Laurier's fall reading week.
In international news, Hungary plans to close its border with Croatia in order to stem the migrant population flow. The Hungarian government said that it would close its southern border with Croatia at midnight. This is in line with previous steps taken by Hungary to prevent migrants from entering their country. Hungary has erected a steel fence that is almost as long as their southern border. This move comes a month after the Hungarian government shut its border with Serbia. Many of these migrants are refugees from the war that have crossed the Balkan Peninsula. Hungary defends the actions by claiming it has to secure its borders from mainly Muslim migrants who Hungary says pose a threat to the, quote, Christian values of Europe. The European Union has agreed to accept 120,000 refugees, a small portion of the 700,000 people expected. Those are your campus, local, national, and international headlines on News 101. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned.
As one poor soul tries to find something good to enjoy on the radio. Let's see here.
God. Ugh. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance.
Ugh. Everybody. God, this is awful.
Well, I climbed up the mountain, climbed back down again for you. I climbed up the mountain again for you, and then I climbed back down, climbed up.
Isn't there anything, 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 anything?
Listening to the radio these days can be distressing. Fortunately, here at CITR, our programmers choose the music that they play, so our charts reflect what people actually listen to. To find out what's really topping the charts, pick up a copy of Beatroot or Discorder magazine, or check us out online at citr.ca. Unless, of course, you'd rather keep listening to the chart-topping single, Everybody Dance.
What, you don't like to dance? Everybody dance. Everybody dance. Everybody dance, dance. What, you don't like to dance?
Welcome back to News 101. You are listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us.
Up next, News 101 director Rohit Joseph's interview with Mario Canseco, VP of Public Affairs at Insights West, about polling and its influence on strategic voting.
I'm the Vice President of Public Affairs at Insights West.
All right. Awesome. Thank you so much, Mario, for taking the time to do this. What's strategic voting?
Well, you know, there's too many definitions about it. I think the closest it would get is saying, for instance, that you have a specific preference for the color of the government or to defeat a government or to see change that doesn't correlate directly with the way that you would vote if you weren't thinking about that end game. Let's say you got somebody who's very environmentally friendly and would like to vote for the Greens because they like certain things that they're doing or they like the candidate in the riding. But if they vote for the Greens, they might think that they're not going to win the riding where they're competing, and their vote would be better used, so to speak, going to the Liberals or the NDP, who may have a chance to win the riding and thereby defeat a conservative, if your main motivation for the vote in this election is to get rid of the government. Mm-hmm. So it's, you know, it's something that has been going on for the past few elections, I guess, particularly since the 2006 election when Harper got his first minority. And you look at those statistics consistently, you know, 60-something percent of us did not vote for the conservatives, and, you know, there's more people who are progressive, which is the term that they like to use. So, you know, if we can find a way to have more progressive people elected, then we can form a government that is not conservative. The main hindrances for that have been that the overtures usually come from the party that's in second place to the party that's in third place. So we saw it consistently in 2008 and the first stages of the 2011 campaign, where the Liberals were saying, you know, vote for your Liberal candidate if you're an NDPer, lend us a hand, and it'll be better if we can defeat conservatives in the ridings where we're doing well. And the final stages of 2011, after Jack Layton's surge in Quebec, it was too late for the NDP to try to court the Liberal voters in the same way and try to get them to vote for them in the places where they could win. Mm-hmm. This time around, because of the presence of riding level polling at a level that we've never seen before, and also because of the intricacies of the race, it's become easier in the sense that you have more information at your disposal, but more complex because the race started as a three-way tie. The NDP was slightly ahead of the Conservatives, the Liberals were in third place, and it's very different for the strategic voter to knock on doors a month and a half ago and say, you know, Tom Mulcair is better positioned to form the government. We think that the NDP can take this riding. If you're somebody who votes Liberal or Green and you want to get rid of Harper, your best idea would be to vote for the NDP. Now, with the Liberals ahead nationally, it's almost as if you flip the script. Yeah. And Liberal people who are knocking on doors are saying to the NDPers, you're wasting your vote. You know, there's not going to be an NDP government, at least judging by what the national surveys have been telling us. Your best choice to not have a Harper government is to vote for the Liberal candidate in your riding.
I actually had that happen to me just like the other day, literally that exact situation. So,
what is your riding?
Vancouver Granville. And
man,
yeah,
that's ground zero, man.
you kind of mentioned like a little bit of the historical trend of strategic voting. I mean, in your experience, was there like a specific example of when it actually worked in the past, or maybe it went horribly wrong?
Well, I think
Canada,
this is the first time.
Yeah,
of course. It's the first time that it's taken to this level. You know, it's something that we like to ask about, and you want to get a sense of how the people make their own decisions on this. You know, you're not voting necessarily for one reason alone. You know, you might be motivated by the leader of the party, even though you're not voting for them directly, unless you live in their riding. You might be motivated by some policies. You might be motivated by change. You might be motivated by fear, you know, and when Harper goes out and tells you that ISIS is going to get you and that the economy is going to tank, you know, that could be a very powerful motivator. Maybe you're not happy with certain things that the government has done, but you trust them to keep you safe. So, you know, you have all of these things in mind when you're casting a ballot. And it's been difficult to try to convert people directly into supporters of a different party because it's always been discussed at a very low level. It's mostly people who knock on doors for a specific party trying to convert progressives who are leaning more towards the other party to support their own. There's never been an effort as large as we see it now, particularly with the Lead Now organization talking about, you know, conducting riding level polling, trying to endorse a candidate or finding a candidate who can be supported in order to defeat a specific conservative. We have more data, which makes it a lot more interesting. I mean, if you go by the national numbers, it can be quite difficult, you know, to look at somebody who's a 30-something and then try to extrapolate those numbers and think that maybe in your riding, this particular party has a better chance because they're now ahead of the conservatives by 4 points. But in your riding, in the last election, the Liberals got 9% of the vote. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to go like that.
Yeah.
It's very confusing. And I think, you know, one of the difficulties here is we haven't seen this at the level that we've seen it now. I mean, there's always been a talk about voting strategically, trying to find a way to defeat conservative candidates. The first example of this, which was real, I guess, would be the 2008 election when Stéphane Dion and the Liberals did not run a candidate against Elizabeth May in Nova Scotia, and the Greens did not run a candidate against Stéphane Dion in Quebec.
Ah, so there's a little political exchange going on there.
Yeah, and they called this conference and said, you know, I mean, essentially Elizabeth May endorsed him and said, here's somebody who has the right plan to deal with climate change. We think that this is important. We will work together, and one of the signs that we will have to show that we will work together in the House is that I'm not running a candidate against him, and he's not running a candidate against me. It made sense because the notion was that you were going to push most of the voters who would have gone Liberal in Nova Scotia, because on that election, Elizabeth May ran against Peter MacKay. And they thought, well, if we can move all of the Liberal voters who would vote Liberal to vote for the Greens, and we have the star power of the leader in this particular riding, we can defeat Peter MacKay. It did not happen.
Oh.
But they talked about it a lot, and they said, you know, this is one of the best examples that we can think of. By not having a candidate for this particular party, then we're essentially trying to make sure that everybody who would vote for the Liberals votes for Elizabeth May because she's been quasi-endorsed. It didn't make any sense or any dent when it came to not having a Green candidate running against Dion. You know, it's a riding that was going to be won by him anyway. There was not a lot of support for the Conservatives in that particular riding, so it didn't have any effect on the other race.
Mm.
But on this one, what we saw there was people who maybe would have voted for the Liberals who said, I'm not happy with MacKay, but I'm not thrilled about being pushed to vote for the Greens.
Mm.
And I have a Liberal candidate in my riding. I would probably vote for that Liberal candidate in my riding. I don't care if they get to 17, 20, or 25%. But you've taken away the opportunity that I had to vote for this particular party without a true coalition deal or a true, you know, scenario where we can do this in more ridings, or without a true sense of unity, or, you know, without a merger of the two parties. It made a lot of people uncomfortable. And one of the reasons for the vote share for the Greens in that election to be not really near MacKay as far as actually defeating him was the fact that many Liberal voters sat it out. You know, Atlantic Canada, even though MacKay's been the MP for a long time, and so was his father, there's a lot of Liberal support in the Maritimes. And, you know, people who wanted to vote for a Liberal candidate showed up at the stations and didn't find a Liberal candidate. So it's difficult to try to make the case unless you do a full merger, which is what the Conservatives did.
It's too bad, though. I guess that was such a tragedy.
Oh, I know. It didn't, you know, it's one of those things that sounded fantastically in their head.
Yeah, in theory.
And then definitely, you know, it just didn't materialize. But it might be partly because of the intricacies of that particular race. And it made sense because Dion was essentially running on the environment. You know, carbon tax, we're going to make things different. We're committed to going back to the environment. His dog was named Kyoto. Like, you know, you could not write a better script for somebody who was running as an environmentalist. But, you know, people reacted very differently, especially because we were in the middle of the crisis. Reacted very poorly to, okay, so now I got to pay a carbon tax and the world is falling apart and I've lost half of my stocks and better stick with Harper.
You mentioned that was a particularly different climate for the elections that year. So now in this year, how do you think polling will influence strategic voting?
Well, it's a little bit of a two-edged, it's a little bit of a double-edged sword because, you know, you don't want to be in a situation.
Thank you, Rohit. You can hear the entire interview with Mario Canseco on News 101's SoundCloud page. We're going to take a quick PSA break, but stay tuned for more contributor segments here on CITR 101.9 FM.
My name is Mario Canseco. I'm the Vice President.
Liveband.com is Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar. New shows are added daily by the city's most active promoters, musicians, and by the driving force of the music scene, the fans. Liveband.com's listings are different because they are integrated with profiles updated by bands and business owners as they promote upcoming events. Check out the archives to see how closely we've worked within the community to put on the shows you love. Visit livemusicvancouver.com for the latest independent and major label event listings. Liveband.com, Vancouver's community-driven concert calendar.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Welcome back to News 101. You're listening to us on CITR 101.9 FM or online at citr.ca, broadcasting live from unceded Musqueam territory here at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. Thank you for being with us.
All right. So, Monday is the last day to vote in the federal election. For those of you still deciding on how to vote, we have a panel of Vancouver Quadra candidates and student representatives to discuss important party issues.
With us in the studio, we have UBC Greens President Regan Zhang.
Oh, hello, everyone. My name is Regan Zhang. I'm here to represent the Green Party of Canada at UBC. I'm also an organizer of the Young Greens of BC, and I'm also a student at UBC. And I believe that in this election, we are really going to find solutions that will build a sustainable future for Canadian economy and the environment. And we think that the Green Party is really the one to do it.
And on the joining us on the phone, we have the president of the Young Liberals of Canada, Justin Kaiser.
Yes, thank you so much. Yes, my name is Justin Kaiser. I'm the president of the Young Liberals of Canada. First, I want to thank UBC and CITR for hosting this today. I think it's a great opportunity to engage with students on campus. I know we spent a lot of time in the last couple months engaging people on campus at UBC, and young Canadians and students at UBC clearly are looking for change in this election, and we truly believe that Justin Trudeau is the only leader that's offering real change for young Canadians and an opportunity to change our politics and our country.
And in the studio, we also have Vancouver Quadra independent candidate Jean-François Caron.
Hi, my name is Jean-François Caron, and I'm actually my own student representative because I'm actually a PhD student here at UBC, although I'm just about to finish, so if I get elected, I can definitely go to Ottawa. I think I'm saying things that the major parties aren't saying, and they're worthwhile things to listen for, even if you're not going to vote because of strategic reasons. And because we're living in Vancouver Quadra, the Liberals are pretty much going to win, so you can still vote for me anyways, and it won't matter. Thank you.
And last but not least, we have Vancouver Quadra independent candidate Mark Boyer representing the Radical Marijuana Party.
Hello, everyone. I'm Mark Boyer, and I'm running in this district, and my real goal is actually to get 5% of the election, because if you get 5%, it enshrines your rights in the district. Our party rubric is converting ordinary residents to private individuals under common law. That is all the way up to the Supreme Court of Canada. And as of 5 months ago, due to R.V. Smith, weed is completely legal medically because the CDSA, or the Controlled Drugs and Substances Act, is of no force and effect to medical marijuana. So that means if you have a medical license, which anyone can go and with a naturopath or a licensed physician can apply and get a license, and that is completely legal in Canada. If any federal regulation wants to say otherwise, we as a party establish the right of anything that is legal in BC and marijuana. We actually just use marijuana as a vehicle to uphold our constitutional rights itself.
And we're excited to have you all here. We also want to note that we were unable to reach an NDP or Conservative representative for our panel.
To start off with our first election question, transportation is a key election issue, especially felt by students. Where do you or your party stand on improving public transit? And Jean-François, we'll start with you.
Right. So, I mean, as a student and as a resident here, I think it's really frustrating that public transit is actually a political issue. This should just be a thing that normal, like regular bureaucratic decisions should make this a non-issue. I mean, UBC is the second largest transit destination in Vancouver after downtown, yet they still built the Canada Line down to the airport instead of building a rapid transit to UBC. I mean, that was because the Olympics were coming, I guess, but it's really thin reasoning. I think if our leaders were willing to actually serve the people and do their jobs properly without making an election, making it an election issue out of everything, we would already have a SkyTrain out to UBC, and it wouldn't even be a big deal. It would just be part of living in a progressive society. So I think the leaders, once elected, should not make this a thing that we need to consult or have referendums about. It should just be done and be done with, to be honest. So I think we should increase the amount of funding that's available. Typically, this is a federal election. Typically, the federal government pays a third of the infrastructure costs for big transit projects. The province will pay another third. That's an issue here in BC because our provincial government doesn't really want to do that. And then the local government typically pays another third. That recipe isn't likely to change regardless of who gets in power. So that's something to think about. Other than transit, though, I think we need more funding for alternative transportation funding. I'm actually a big cycling advocate in Vancouver with the AMS Bike Co-op here at UBC and with Hub in the rest of Vancouver. And I think there should be more federal funding available for municipalities and regional districts to improve cycling infrastructure. And even more importantly, there should be a separate funding pool to create connections between jurisdictions. Because here at UBC, there's like three different jurisdictions at play. There's UBC, there's provincial land, and there's the city of Vancouver. And it's always in the connections where things are shitty. And I think if we had specific money for making those connections, it would really improve things. And, you know, cycling is a win-win for everybody.
And Mark, what's your response to transportation?
This is actually a really cool issue because, again, with 5% of the election, it actually establishes common law rights, which means that anything that's legal in BC and Canada is legal, regardless of any like federal regulations and things like that. So it gives us a way bigger opening and liberty to be able to implement these actual laws and things that we can provide. We obviously have to like draft a solution to the problem, because you can't just go up to a court or like an office and go, rah, 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 there's a problem. They don't know the solution themselves. So basically, we have to have proposals and real drafts that have money and everything economically sound. I actually spoke to Chris Constable, which is the head of like the Green Party, and he has a really economically sound program that is reviewed by like 30 economists and some UBC professors and stuff like that. So that's actually a really cool plan in which I can implement and basically nitpick all these things that anyone can provide, because a candidate is more the representative of the people and they propose all these plans. And if it seems amazing and especially reviewed by 30 economists, that's great, you know? So basically we're, with the Marijuana Party and establishing common law rights, you facilitate all these encumbrances that we now face with like federal governments and all these just kind of annoying regulations that they're implementing even on like dispensaries and towns and stuff like that. Because if something is legal, then no one else should have the say otherwise to say it's not. This is actually can be very easily translated with an example of like abortion, even, because it's a hotly highly contested even to this day, 40 years after it was ruled completely legal. You don't see nowadays members of clinics getting arrested or like clinics getting shut down because it's completely legal, established in the Supreme Court of Canada by unanimous decision. And that's what we have established for marijuana and many other rights. So actually, as a party, we don't necessarily have anything to do with just marijuana. We have everything to do with common law rights, which is everything that's already legal in Canada, which is now being threatened by federal regulations, such as our water, right? Nestle and Monsanto and stuff like that. So this is like the real issues. And we know that hemp actually can solve all these issues and actually sustainably get our plans back on the track that really gives us solutions to all the encumbrances we face. So.
And now we're going to go to Justin. Where do the Liberal platform stand on public transport?
Yeah, so it's very clear to us Canadian cities have been growing at a rapid rate across Canada. But investment in public transit has not kept pace. That's a clear issue. And Stephen Harper's failure to invest has led to worsening traffic congestion, making it harder for example, UBC students getting out to campus. There has been a lack of leadership there. And we've seen that it's forecasted to have the Lower Mainland grow by about 1 million people over the next 25 years. So it's very clear that we need immediate leadership and investment from the federal government in our cities, including in Vancouver. And over the next decade, a Liberal government would invest almost $20 billion in transit infrastructure. That's more than any other party has put on the table for cities. And it will quadruple the federal investment in public transit. Different projects that we're looking to offer funding for include increased C-bus service, so it's every 10 minutes during rush hour and morning and the afternoon, so that people can get to and from the North Shore to downtown, to whether it's UBC Robinson Square, SFU, or out to UBC Point Grey. We'll also ensure that there's funding available for the Broadway corridor. That's something that has not been very clear from the federal government, if there's available funding for that, and that's something that a Liberal government would ensure that there is funding available for that to the regional municipalities. And also investing in light rail in Surrey. That is something that the region has made very clear that isn't something that's needed, and that's something that a Liberal government would invest in. It's something that, again, Stephen Harper has failed to do that, and no other party or leader in this campaign other than Justin Trudeau has stepped up to the plate to offer real immediate investment that will get our country moving forward.
Thank you. And Reagan, you have the last word on transportation.
Okay, thank you. Just before answering that question, I just want to quickly say how glad I am to be sitting here with two independent candidates who are actually running in this election. As many of you might know, that the Green Party is really a group of independents. So I just really want to say how glad I am to be having this conversation with you. With regards to public transportation, it's not really just a matter of traffic and getting to school or getting to work. It's also a matter for our economy as a whole. By investing in infrastructure, by investing in public transit, we're actually creating jobs. So that's really important to the Green Party. And if you actually look at how previous governments have been doing, both at the federal level and provincial levels, you can. I did some math. According to just in BC, the capital investment in public transit funding was only about a sixth of the money that has been put into building highways and bridges and maintaining them. So, as you can see, really, our governments haven't really been putting transit as a priority. And the Greens really believe in actually using this opportunity, and by developing transit, it's an excellent way to actually invest in our local economy and having jobs. And so we believe in investing in local public transit, as well as are having a comprehensive national rail investments that will include reducing traffic congestion, and as well as having fast, inexpensive, safe modes of transport in key commuter corridors. Our leader, Elizabeth May, and as well as all Greens, have really been, we have a fond attachment with Via Rail, and we believe that a national rail strategy is very close in sight. And we actually have an even bigger commitment to transportation than previously mentioned by Justin from the Liberal Party. We have a fully costed plan to invest in Via Rail in 2016 to 2017 for $600 million, and increasing that up to $764 million by 2020.
So student debt is another huge concern facing young people, and there are national concerns about the economy. What will you or your party do to financially assist Canadian students? We'll start with Justin, actually, this time. So Justin, What is the Liberal Party's platform on helping out Canadian students financially?
Of course. Well, it's very clear that far too many Canadians are having difficulties obtaining post-secondary education. The costs continue to rise. Over the last decade with Stephen Harper as Prime Minister, we've seen the cost of tuition rise by about 30%, and that's something that and we need to obviously assist students with. Our plan will actually offer more money to students through the Canada Student Grant Program for low-income students, up to $3,000 per year for full-time students and $1,800 per year for part-time students. We'll also increase the income thresholds for the eligibility for the Canada Student Grant Program, giving more Canadians access to even larger grants. We also recognize that the realities of repaying student debt, roughly the amount that students have of student debt when they graduate is about $26,000, and they're forced to pay it right away. We'll reform the program, make changes to it, so that students don't start paying back anything on their student loan until they have a full-time job, making at least $25,000 per year. And on top of that, we'll work with the provinces and territories to ensure that these investments go directly to students and that we're able to find additional means to reduce the costs of education.
All right. And then next up, how about Jean-Francois?
Okay. So here's a weird thought. If somebody can go to university and have their all of their tuition paid, say, by their parents, I'm coming from a reasonably upper middle class family, and that was fully paid. So I have no student debt. Everything was paid up front. Somebody going to the same university and paying the same fees, but who had to front a debt load and then has to repay the fees later and pay interest on those fees, had more expensive post-secondary education than I did, just because my parents were richer. So that just makes no sense at all in a progressive society. I think student debts, if they should exist at all, should be categorically interest-free. And I think our governments should definitely increase taxes for the wealthy and funnel a lot of that money to post-secondary funding to make it able to, so that the universities can reduce their fees, but more importantly as well, so that the universities could less rely on corporate donations to function. Because if we keep making our universities become corporate organs and job training organs for things that companies used to do for themselves, I don't know, it just seems really distasteful. It's this corporatization of public institutions. Mm-hmm. So there's all these different issues around this, and it's fundamentally unjust. So definitely we should increase funding for post-secondary institutions to reduce their debt, to reduce their fees, not charge interest on loans that end up making the poorest of the people pay more than the richest people for the same service. And then we should also push back against this corporatization of our public space, because it's getting out of hand, to be honest.
And Regan, how about you and what the Green Party represents when it comes to helping students out financially?
Well, the increase in student debt load in Canada over the past few years has been so dramatic that the Green Party really has a firm plan to eliminate. Basically, we're going to have a debt forgiveness program to actually eliminate student debts, current and in the future, for current student debt that is above $10,000. The Liberal Party and the NDP have both committed to some forms of reducing this kind of debt for students. However, the Green Party is going to go one step further. We have a fully costed plan to eliminate post-secondary tuition by 2020. Zero tuition.
And Mark, can the Marijuana Party possibly top that? Zero tuition from the Green Party?
This is what's really interesting. Again, I spoke earlier about being a candidate. You actually represent the people and you represent these sound economic plans. I, as I even said earlier, agree with most of the Green Party's plans. The unfortunate reality that we now face with all these different changes in law, especially Stephen Harper basically like ripping our Constitution apart, it changed a lot of things in Canadian law where certain things that are already legal in Canada now being controlled by the federal government is trumped by the federal government when it used to be trumped by the Elections Act, which creates the Constitution, electoral process, trusts, and all these things that our Constitution's founded on. Basically, this is a big issue, and the Green Party has already a sound economic plan. Yet with any party, if they're headed by a lawyer, they're physically barred because they're members of the Bar Association from practicing common law. Basically because of in 1993, lawyers' oaths was changed from being submissive to the crown, to being submissive to the crown, from being respectful to the crown. That changes everything, especially nowadays when Harper 3 years ago removed one line of the Elections Act, which, if the Elections Act is in conflict with any other act, the Elections Act is supreme. That means that now anything that comes into conflict with that means that NATO and all these trade agreements are supreme. Jean-Francois actually hit it right on the head when he said all these corporatization of our public institutions. That's completely right. That's exactly what our party framework literally does. It's converting ordinary residents to private individuals under common law. Common law is everything up to the Supreme Court of Canada. This is how we realistically, without lawyers who are barred from doing this, get to do it. If I'm elected, even if I get 5% of the vote, I get a voice in this district that's enshrined right. Basically, the rights of a membership is given to every single member of this district. If I'm elected, Green Party is the person that's going to be right in my room basically saying, do this, do this, do this. And I'll be accepting most of their plans, actually, because they're all economically sound. So again, a candidate is just a representative of their constituents. It's my physical number one and only job. And whoever presents me the best plan is what's realistically going to happen.
All right. Thank you. And to close our panel for the evening, for each of you, I will ask you to answer this question. Why are you or your party the best representative for young Canadians in Vancouver? Mark, why don't we start with you, since you were right on it. So it seemed like you were going on a related note.
Cool.
Close things off, and then we'll get to hear from the others as well.
All right. Well, I'm 25, and this is obviously my first time that I've ever run for political office. And it's to actually make blatantly obvious what it should be common sense that is really not too common. Of all these solutions that we already have, patents and full disclosure documents that prove all these solutions that we have at hand for our economy, for our environment, for social economic exchange, all these things, regardless of what these trade deals and corporatization is trying to impose on us. This is the main single issue across the board in whatever topic you look and discuss about, is whether we Canadians and Canadian government, common law jurisdiction, have jurisdiction or control over that case or that application of law, or does a federal government, maritime admiral jurisdiction, which is basically just corporate law, have ultimate say over things. This is the biggest and single most important clash, and it's going on. My simple solution is even getting 5% blankets this district. If I'm elected, I'm just going to take the most sound economic plans by any of the parties. I'll invite any of them to actually even host debates inside of my office to see who should have what enacted. So yeah, just simple, realistic solutions we're providing. Thank you.
All right, thank you. And Jean-Francois, we'll have you up next to close things off.
All right. So similar to something Mark said, actually, is that as an independent, I have the privilege of having my mind changed through sound argument. So I think that's actually one of the big advantages is I have very strong views, and I have very strong, they're all guided by a very strong ethic. But obviously, I'm by myself. I don't have a team of economists and party planners and everything else. But that has amazing power, because by hosting meetings and discussing with citizens and you know, young people around, maybe not any of my policies could be changed, obviously, but I haven't made up my mind about everything yet. The big parties, they pretend that they have a sound policy about everything, but honestly, they just like have to cover all the bases because they might be asked anything. But I'm a bit suspicious of that, because not obviously they haven't thought everything through. So that's one of the reasons why I'd be a great representative here. Another reason is that I think, this is my theory, young people are more idealistic than we give them credit for. I think this is a big reason why young people as a category don't vote that much, is because our system is so rotten that it feels terrible to participate in it. It feels rotten to vote for somebody that you don't even like just because you hate somebody else even more, you know, and you just want to just not participate in the whole thing and wait till it's over. And I get that. But I think I want to tell all the young people who are listening, you know, all 12 of you, sorry, it's not wrong to be idealistic. You're not naive. It's normal. And we need more of it, because this cynical age that we're living in is immoral, and it's broken, and it's only benefiting a small segment of the population. So be idealistic. Vote for me if I sound good. Honestly, if you like the Greens better, go vote for them. I'm not going to try to convince you otherwise. Be out there, get involved, participate. This is our democracy isn't just about voting. It isn't just about reading platform websites and then deciding at the polls. It's about participation and engagement. So I'll leave it at that.
Thank you, Jean-Francois. Justin, why should you and the Liberals represent young Canadians in Vancouver?
Well, I think Justin Trudeau, as Liberal leader and would as Prime Minister, as an MP, has always represented young Canadians. Before he became an MP, he worked at Kitimovic and he was a teacher, and he's always worked to better young Canadians' lives. But as Prime Minister, he'll work to fight climate change by working with the provinces to put a price on carbon pollution. He'll phase out the subsidies to fossil fuel industries. Right now, we subsidize the oil industry and fossil fuel companies. We'll end that, and we'll invest in clean tech jobs. We will engage young Canadians in our government, forming Canada's first ever Prime Minister's Youth Advisory Council, ensuring that young Canadians have a voice at the highest levels of our current government. As I've mentioned on transit, we'll invest $20 billion for the urgently needed new transit infrastructure. And we'll also work to create more jobs. Right now, there's 170,000 less young Canadians in the workforce since the 2008-2009 recession. We'll work to invest $1.3 billion over 3 years to create 120,000 jobs, 40,000 jobs each year for 3 years, to ensure that young Canadians have a job once they finish university. We're also, as I mentioned, invest money into ensuring that young Canadians can afford university. We will invest about $300 million, so about $3,000 per year for full-time students, $1,800 for part-time students. And of course, we'll legalize and regulate marijuana, which we've had a stance on for quite a while. We're the only major party in the country that will fully legalize and regulate it, and I think that's something that is necessary. And on top of all of that, we'll actually reform our electoral system. Right now, it's first past the post, and the polls are close right now. The Conservatives could still win, and we need to make sure that people get out to vote, and the Liberals are barely leading right now, but we need to ensure people get out to vote, and that way that Stephen Harper doesn't get another majority government. And once the Liberals are in, we'll make sure that we reform the electoral system so that first past the post is no longer in this country. So that's everything in a nutshell of why Justin Trudeau and the Liberal Party is best to represent young Canadians in this country.
All right. Thank you, Justin. Regan, you and the Green Party get the last word. Why should you represent young Canadians?
Thank you. Youth employment, unemployment right now is about twice as much as the national average. And so that's why the Green Party has actually the most number of solutions for young people in this country right now. We are going to dedicate $1 billion per year to municipalities to hire young people. And we have a full national sustainable jobs plan to actually allow our highly trained university and college graduates to actually go and find jobs in the green, in clean tech sectors. And we are the party that is going to abolish student loan interests, and we are the party that is going to increase bursaries. And how are we going to do that? All of that is actually within grasp for Canada. Greens are not wasteful spenders. If we closed our eliminated the tax havens that Canada currently has, if we tax pollution, if we increase the royalties that we are getting from resource extraction in this country, we can pay for all of that. All of this is within reach. We have heard in the Liberals and the NDPs have, the Liberals have a Canada Green Investment Bond. The NDPs have proposed a green municipal fund. In Vancouver, there are candidates who label themselves as green liberals or green NDPs. Well, why don't